Let's go, let's go, let's go. Tempo in and out of the huddle.
I want to go odd. 5, 51 mirror.
This is Patriots Playbook.
Go stack guts combat. Odd, 51 mirror.
Patriots Playbook, breaking down last Sunday's game.
They're looking for man coverage in the zone. They didn't have anybody to throw to. Just stay outside on the 7 route.
Next Sunday's game.
Be ready for the grapes check, too, okay? Because we'll get the bunch on 3rd and short.
Even 51 grapes. Even 51 grapes.
And the rest of the NFL season.
Yeah, go ahead and hit it in there because the backers are going to fast read over the top.
And some of the fun stuff in between. Now, here's John Brook on Patriots Playbook.
Come on, let's go, let's go.
Short week, quick week, which means we've got work to get to today here inside the Patriots Playbook on Patriots.com Radio. I'm John Rook. Eric Scalavino from Patriots Football Weekly hanging around for a bit here in the opening hour of the program. Hour number two.
Help if I turn my mic on?
Yeah, you're a little bit more of an advanced veteran than that. The red button's got to be in the on position.
Short week, I'm thinking too far ahead.
I know. We're always working ahead here. That is very true. And Boston.com, Eric Friends will join us in hour number two. He covers the AFC East as well as the Patriots, and he's going to be in studio because the interview time is about, what, 3:30 thereabouts?
Yeah, but we're told now because it's a walkthrough, it'll probably be earlier than that, so we have to be prepared.
Be ready to go at a moment's notice.
Yeah, yesterday, apparently, it was a 45-minute early opening for the locker room.
Okay.
So we need to be on our toes for
Got to be ready to go.
Yeah.
So Eric's here until he has to go off, and Eric will also be here, so I'll have E and E in the studio, and it's time for you.
He spells his name properly, too, by the way.
E-R-I-K, just like
yes,
you, right?
That's the proper way to spell
it. Yeah, well, that's what I thought. How come the K and not the C? Was that just
It's Scandinavian. That
would explain the beak, then.
No, that would not, actually. Not at all explain the beak.
Very Nordic.
Yeah, well... No, my dad was a big fan of the Viking lore.
Okay.
And
wow. So we like
always
the
wanted to
Eric
name.
With
he
a K.
loved that. Yeah, and he loved the name itself and the spelling with the K.
You should change Scalavino to Skal.
Oh.
Now we're talking real Nordic.
No, that's really
yeah, absolutely. Okay. Love how we just digress right off the start of the program.
That's what I'm here for, John.
It is to get you right off track. Yes, yeah. Exactly. It is, of course, Nitpick Tuesday, but as I said, it's the short work week with the Thursday night game with the Jets. So today, while we are going to deal with nitpicks, and obviously there are many that we will be discussing, and I need your thoughts on as well, we'll begin to sort of turn the corner, turn the page from week 6 into week 7 in hour number 2 of the program today with Eric Friends from Boston.com. And we'll get his thoughts not only on the Buffalo game, but certainly look ahead at the Jets. And then we spend all Jets all the time tomorrow. And Rich Cimini, who covers the Jets for ESPN New York, he's scheduled to be with us tomorrow, as is the guru, Russell Baxter, who will move his appearance from Thursday to Wednesday for us this week because we won't be here on Thursday. It's game day, so we'll give way to the pregame social before the game kickoff at 8:25 Eastern time on Thursday night. And I'm wondering, you know, because I was thinking after last week's Thursday night game, which actually turned out to be a pretty good one. You know, the Colts got out to such a huge lead on the Houston Texans, and then the Texans came roaring back, made a game out of it, thought they should have won it, but somehow the Colts held on. And I'm thinking, well, they finally got a good one, and they'll probably get two in a row. And then after the injuries happened to the Patriots' two key performers, which we will discuss here shortly, I'm wondering, maybe we'll get another good game in a row. And now I'm not so sure. I'm kind of waffling back and forth on this. Because you know as well as anybody, even though sometimes a team seems to be walking wounded, and we're at the time of the year now where injuries start to become really prevalent. You know, we're nearing that mid-range stage of the season here in week 7.
Where you start to know
who you are. Yeah, and we talked about this at the start of the year. I've written about this. We've opined about this. But the teams that have the best depth and their 53-man roster are the teams that survive what has happened to New England. Now, they managed to do it last year to the point where you lose Mayo and you end up in the AFC Championship game. You lose Mayo and Wilfork and you end up in the AFC Championship game a year ago. Whether it's smoke and mirrors or whatever, that's the bottom line, and that's the proof of the pudding. So it doesn't mean that this team's season is over, but...
No, but you also, I think, yes, you want to get as far as you can, but a part of me also says, do you really want to get exposed and end your season that way?
Mm-hmm.
You know, because the way they got embarrassed in Denver, they would have gotten equally embarrassed against Seattle, I think, the way the Seahawks were playing at the end of last year. Mm-hmm. You know, you can see you could see it coming that they were only going to get so far. I don't know too many people who really thought that the Patriots had a legitimate chance of winning it all last year with what everything that happened to them.
But they did have a chance.
They had a chance. Of course, anytime you're on the field, you have a chance.
Yeah,
but
absolutely.
A realistic chance, I mean.
Understood. Understood.
Given all of the adversity they had to overcome.
Absolutely.
It seemed just too much to ask.
I guess the overall point here, though, is that adversity is something every team has to overcome at some stage of a season.
Right, some more than others.
And maybe the Patriots had their fair share last year. They certainly have a huge obstacle in front of them now with the loss of the season for Stephen Ridley and Jerod Mayo, although nothing has been official yet because they haven't officially been put on IR yet, have they?
No. Nothing official.
Nothing official has come from the team, although they have been listed as out, not a surprise, for Thursday night's game.
Well, no, that's not exactly true.
Well, in yesterday's injury report, they were listed as out.
Right, they were, but that technically that's not the last report. They have to issue one today.
Well, there are two others, yeah.
Right.
Well, there had to be one for today.
Right, and the one, and there'll probably be one tomorrow.
Probably.
Which gives the official...
Well, or you could, yeah, there'd have to be one for tomorrow, and then you'd have the inactive list that would be due 90 minutes before kickoff.
Right. What yesterday should have been was DNP.
You know, the Patriots
did not participate.
Yeah, but they, you know, that, I thought actually when I saw the report yesterday, because, you know, every team has to do one, I thought it was unusual that they already said out, because you know how close to the vest the Patriots play things.
Right.
So I actually thought that was a bit out of character for New England to already list them as out, even though I think even with our own eyes we could see that would be the case.
That's going to be the case. They're going to be out for probably the rest of the year,
yeah.
Both of them. But, I think it was just a little – it's NFL and their stupid rules with the short weeks and the injury reports.
You should
only issue an injury report or practice participation report when you have an actual practice.
Right.
This need for having to have three in a week leading up to a game is just preposterous.
Yeah. Well, I think that's trying to put everybody on an even keel. I know the Patriots sometimes thumb their nose at the NFL for having to do that, but that's why I thought yesterday's injury report was a little bit unpatriot-like, but nevertheless, we'll take the information as it comes. Now, the big issue is, of course, how do you replace these guys? And I'm of the opinion, I've already read several other opinions that are similar, certainly want your take on this, but, you know, where Ridley is concerned in the backfield. That does put quite a bit of onus on Shane Vereen, on Brandon Bolden, although I'm not so sure that Bolden is the answer here because I think you and I have discussed in the past, you know, because he's such an integral part to all of the special teams play that he's involved with. I think he's involved in just about every kick team.
Mm-hmm.
That I'm not sure he quote-unquote takes Ridley's reps at running back. Vereen undoubtedly will get some. I think you'll see the rookie James White, who's only been off of the inactive list one time through the first 6 weeks.
Right.
I think he's undoubtedly going to be activated to, you know, potentially take some reps there. I wouldn't be surprised, even though I mentioned during the preseason that I loved him going up against the other team's second and third teamers. I thought Jonas Gray had a pretty doggone good preseason for the Patriots, and it wouldn't shock me because he's a big back type. It wouldn't shock me to see him brought in almost to take Bolden's previous role.
Yeah, that's a possibility. I agree.
So, but that it's going to be a running back by committee, and I frankly believe, Eric, almost a game plan by committee situation at running back for the Patriots for the remainder of the year without Stephen Ridley. A lot of it will depend on what they feel the game plan will be to have to defeat a particular opponent week in and week out, and whether or not that means they're going to activate two or three or even four running backs.
You know what was interesting today? I saw a quote from LeGarrette Blount over in Pittsburgh saying something to the effect, I'll paraphrase, that you know, I was a main factor on one of the best teams in football last year. Of course I want the ball more. I guess in response to a question about his role and the way he's being utilized in Pittsburgh. And especially given what happened to Stephen Ridley on Sunday, wouldn't it have been nice to have had a guy like LeGarrette Blount still
What's
on this
roster? What's his contract situation?
Roster?
Could they make a trade before the end of the month?
I can't remember if it was a 1 or 2 year deal, but I just thought that that was noteworthy because this was a guy that a lot of fans liked, wanted, thought he was going to be around, and but now they can really use a guy like him. And this is the time of the year when, you know, after the midway point, when Blunt started to come on for the Patriots, he was their offense at the end of the
year. He was their offense at the end of the year. That's exactly right. Would you preclude the Patriots from considering making a deal before the trade deadline in a couple of weeks?
No, I wouldn't rule anything out with this team. No, I think it's more likely the original scenario you posited with bringing
Gray
up from the practice squad.
You've got a shot. And activating White.
Or activating White and giving him a shot. Yeah, but they need, and Bolden maybe will have to get more reps. He actually did get a little bit more time on Sunday, obviously, but the running game isn't the primary concern, though, for this offense.
Well, it was going to look bad last week. I'm of the opinion against Buffalo anyway, because Buffalo still is number one in the NFL right now in rush defense. So we've seen, you know, that their front four and largely their front seven, how stout they can be against the run. Mm-hmm. They gave the Patriots an average of less than 2 yards per carry on Sunday. Now, that could, you know, you could certainly point to Buffalo's prowess. You can also point to the revolving door at several offensive line positions that happened again on Sunday for the Patriots, and a lot of that was due to some injury. Clearly, there was no Brian Stork for the game. Dan Connolly got hurt early in the game. Jordan Devey and Marcus Cannon and, and even Nate Solder had some real rough moments during the game. Mm-hmm. So it's a combination of several things involved here. But Buffalo still stuffed them. So right now you're going to have some production because we all know that, you know, the run is going to set up the play action, and the play action ability is going to make Tom Brady that much better.
Well, I also thought that the O-line, such as it is, did a better job pass protecting than I even expected against the formidable Bills front. By and large, there were moments, obviously, when there were fissures. But
you're,
I think
you're right.
They actually did give Tom Brady a time to throw.
With the notable exception of Solder getting whipped by Jerry Hughes around that left end. I mean,
like I said, that kind of thing will happen time and again. But it wasn't happening every series. It wasn't happening with frequency.
I would also suggest that on a bum ankle, which apparently Brady had, he did a magnificent job of stepping up into the pocket.
Yeah, he did. He had one of his better games,
no doubt.
Accuracy wise, decision, everything. He had a very good game.
The receivers ran crisp.
Not perfect, but he had a very good
receivers
game.
Ran crisp routes. I wrote about that in the View from Above this week. It was kind of like, wow, who knew that we had this capability. And as much as we have bashed the play calling, and I think rightfully so to this point in time, up until week six, I wanted to make sure that, you know, at least in today's program, I mentioned specifically that I thought it was a great game plan put forth by Josh McDaniels.
They did. They executed it fairly well. The one thing I liked was that they were taking shots downfield. Not afraid to, like, initially there were a couple of times when they were in third and longs and they just hand the ball to Vereen and basically give up
and
the play.
And you're kind of wondering,
and that leaves you going,
what are we doing? Yeah.
But as the game went on, they started to take more downfield chances and they were hitting. And the other thing, Gronk was noticeably better than he even was the week before when he was noticeably better than the week before that. He's starting to become Gronk again, which is going to be huge, especially if they don't have as much of a running game to balance out the rest of it. So that was, to me, I mean, he got involved. Edelman, as usual, was involved. LaFell ended up contributing a little bit more. It's taken him a while to get going. And
got a very good ability, by the way, of gaining yards after the catch.
Yeah, yeah. I've
been very impressed with that.
And it's only one catch each for the next seven guys, but the fact that there were more than just three guys getting contributing to the offense, to me, is a good sign. They need more of that. I mean, it would be nice if they had more than one catch each, but the only downside to that, Danny Amendola was not one of the 10 to catch a pass from Brady the other day. Still can't find a way to get him the ball. It's becoming troubling.
That has to be examined, I think, a bit more, whether or not that's on him or just by a design of the offense. I just think that requires a little bit more digging into. The other issue that we wanted to get out here before we get into nitpicks clearly is the issue of replacing Jerod Mayo on the defensive side. And now, you know, I saw this. I'm not sure where I first saw it, but I've seen it in a couple of places over the last 48 hours or so, Eric, since the game had completed. That, ironically, last year, Jerod also went down in week six.
Yeah, that's the first thing I thought of, actually.
And he went down almost a year to the day.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was the Saints game last year with the pectoral. That's the first thing I thought of was...
He went down, I believe, on the 13th of October last year. He went down on the 12th of October this year.
Yep.
So I think October 11th of 2015 ought to be a red flag day for Jerod Mayo.
Yeah, this was a much worse injury than the one he got last year. I mean, pectoral muscle last year, sure, obviously it was bad enough he had to miss the rest of the season, but we're talking about...
Your wheels.
Yeah, we're talking about, it was his right knee that was in the brace that we saw afterwards. But, you could tell right away that it was bad. When your teammates are huddling around you with their helmets off and... You know, the card is coming out. I mean, it's just not. The other thing, too, John, when I said this on the other show, watching it live, it didn't look like anything happened.
Right, I would agree. It was even tough to see it on the replay, to be honest.
But on the replay, I didn't even, my first thought was not that it was his knee. It was either that it was a neck or his back.
Back. Because it got compressed.
Yeah.
They both got compressed because he was coming up underneath the runner.
Yes. And... That to me was a little more surprising to me when I found out that it was the knee that they were actually working on, because especially the way they got the cart right away and they were all kind of like, he was on the ground for a long time. So my first thought, I was, you know, scared that it might be something incredibly serious, like he couldn't move his extremities or something. But then when they started to move, that calmed me down a little bit. But still, it was. It wouldn't surprise me if he's even a little bit more sore in that area too, because of the way he got it right at the top of the helmet.
Yep,
the direct force of that meeting him head on.
Well, in replacing him, I actually thought Deontay Skinner, for the large part, had a pretty good game. On Sunday, I'm sure we'll get a chance to see him a little bit more. There's quite a possibility that you might see Jagera Davis, you might see Chris White.
Yeah.
I know they had some linebackers in for workouts yesterday as well. Clearly a move is going to be made there, but in the short term, especially getting ready for the Jets on Thursday night, and because the Jets are certainly more adept at running the football as opposed to throwing the football as it now stands, does it stand to reason that we'd see more of a heavy package defensively with maybe with either a four or a five-man front, maybe the 52 look again, just to take the pressure off the linebackers and to put the emphasis on stopping the Jets on the ground game?
That's not a bad idea. I mean, I think last year against the Jets was the first time we saw that, if I'm not mistaken.
Right.
The 5-2 kind of look.
5-2 look, yeah.
The problem is that they don't have a ton of bodies to put in the five part of that.
Well, that's why I'm thinking it to me.
Unless, I mean, if they do it, they're going to have to have a lot thinner guys in
there
than,
you want. I'm thinking out loud here. To me, the obvious call-up, if you're going to make a call-up from Mayo being deactivated for the year, to me, one of the first call-ups I would consider is Joe Villano off the practice squad, because that addresses the issue up front, even though you know you're not going to have the linebacking up anyway, and you could probably use to an extent guys like Chung, or Wilson or Harmon to almost mirror that linebacker position, you know, in a dime package, which I think we saw some of after Mayo went down on Sunday. And so to me, that means, all right, well, then we need to bolster our front five, and Villano's call up from the practice squad probably makes more sense.
Yeah, I mean, that's a guy that's another obvious move, I think. That's not a bad call, because you've already called up a couple of linebackers that you didn't expect anyway, so...
All right, so let me also flip this out at you, because we talked about, you know, now a couple of weeks away from a trading deadline and maybe considering looking for a running back. Mm-hmm. Do you do that as well defensively for Mayo?
To look for a linebacker?
Mm-hmm.
Well, we mentioned Paul Posluszny at the end of the other show, No, I don't think so.
Not as much as offense, maybe. If you could prioritize one or the other, what would your priority be?
Offense.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Interesting.
Time you? For, no?
I think I would want to see what I have from White and Gray before I did that. Now, listen, if you think you could get LeGarrette Blount pulled away from Pittsburgh because he's not getting the reps that either he thought he was going to get or the team thought he was going to get, if you could get him for a fifth-round draft pick, okay, I'd bring him back. I'd go get him.
Yeah.
I think they'd be willing to spend a five, wouldn't you?
Well, the thing is that they didn't want to pay him to begin with. They could have brought him back. And now he got the money that he wanted from Pittsburgh.
He got the money.
So that he, that
but you've got a need. But yeah. You've got a need now. Okay, so the money's moot right now because you would have to honor the prorated portion of whatever Pittsburgh agreed to pay him.
Yeah, I suppose.
So if you could get him back to fill out, you know, this year, why wouldn't you?
Yeah.
I mean, you know, because he knows your offense, he knows you, you know him. You just it was a business decision. Mm-hmm. It had nothing to do, I think, with his football abilities or anything else. It was strictly that they just didn't think that his worth to the team was what he could command in the open market.
Right.
But that dynamic has now changed because the Patriots have a need specifically for someone of his abilities without Stephen Ridley.
It's a possibility, I think.
Well, I think I would lean – I mean, I don't want to underscore Mayo's importance. I just seem to think that, you know, they're both very intriguing. I think I would still slightly lean toward a defensive need first, just because we're the ones that actually thought that the Patriots had the most room to make up and did so in the offseason in getting this defense to a championship caliber. If you look at it by the numbers, they're right there. I mean, overall, they're, I think, eighth in the NFL in total defense. And, you know, so, and they're doing, and they're number one in giveaway takeaway. So, you know, they're stripping the ball. They're doing all the things that you need to do to give your offense a chance. And frankly, I think that's part of the reason why the offense has kickstarted itself over the last 2 weeks because of some of the gifts that the defense is providing
for it. No doubt. I mean, look at the short fields. All 13 of their first half points that last week were from defensive turnovers.
They scored every time they touched the ball in the second half against Buffalo.
But even the first half, they got all 13 of their points came directly from defensive turnovers.
So, you know, I mean, that's why I want to make sure that you're still good on that side of the ball. Mm-hmm. I don't want to miss production there because right now that production is leading to, you know, firing up the offense again, if that makes any sense. You know, again, it's. I think that they'll address both. It wouldn't shock me to see either one or both areas adhered to or paid attention to before the trade deadline. Wouldn't shock me in the least. But I think that they also, again, we've been preaching championship teams have depth, have better quality depth than the have-nots in the NFL.
Mm-hmm.
And the Patriots put that to the test last year. They're getting ready now to put it to the test again this year because they are missing two bona fide frontline starters gone. And gone for the year. How do they overcome this? Mm-hmm. Exactly. All right, you know the drill. It's very easy to get a hold of us here in the program. 855-PATS-500, P-A-T-S-500, toll-free telephone number. The email address, webradio@patriots.com. You can hit me up on Twitter, @JRBroadcaster. You can also find us on Facebook, John.Rook, R-O-O-K-E. And if you haven't done this friend request, you can do that, and then you can post, and we can chat during the show via Facebook as well. Want your nitpicks? What's the biggest nitpick that stands out in your mind from Sunday's game? I've got a couple that I will share. I've also written about them as well in the Nitpicks and Nitwicks View from Above that's on the website from today. But if you've got something that kind of floats a little bit differently, need to hear that as well so we can kind of put the wrap on this and then start turning our attention to the JETS coming up here on Thursday night. So that's how we'll spend a lot of the rest of our time here on the program with Eric Friends from Boston.com joining us in hour number two. I can't let you go, though.
Don't worry.
Okay.
Don't worry. We're prepared.
Just yet, because this is all about learning here on the program, right?
Mm-hmm. Growing, learning.
Growing, right. Learning, taking our own games to the next level.
Uh-huh.
Right?
Right. Absolutely. Why else are we here?
Okay. Can we cue the orchestra maestro?
No.
No,
he's not
yet.
Ready.
He's not ready yet. Okay. Well, let me know when
he hasn't learned. He hasn't grown
enough.
Let me
know when the CBS orchestra.
He
under the direction of Kevin Collins.
He needs a little bit more.
Is ready to actually go forth.
Ladies and gentlemen, children of all ages, it's time to pull up your britches, put on your Argyle sweaters, puff on your corn cob pipes, and gather round the fire for Eric Scalavino's Word of the Day.
All right, John.
Go.
Are you ready for this?
Yes.
Oh, by the way, I you haven't updated me on how I'm doing against Robin in this game this year.
Let's see. I believe you've baffled her on, what have we done? We've done four or five of them thus far?
Well, we're 6 weeks in, so this will be the, yeah, so six. This is the seventh week.
Seems like we skipped one somewhere one week.
Well, maybe, okay.
Whatever the case. I think that she had, like, the last couple okay, but there were, like, three or four of them that she
that
was,
stumped
like,
her?
Yeah, that you stumped her.
Okay, well,
so
hopefully I can stump her today.
Okay.
Lapidary.
Lapidary.
Mm-hmm.
Lapidary.
That's correct.
Okay.
That's correct.
Go.
Now, you're not going to... No clue, huh?
I was his fourth grade spelling bee champ. I'm not anything else.
All right. Lapidary is refers to something that is either engraved on or suitable to be engraved, suitable for engraving.
Can you use
and
that
something
in a sense?
That is, yeah, and some and there's more to the meaning too, and a secondary meaning is also short and concise to make an elegant point. So, for instance, the way the Patriots have won these last 2 weeks
mm-hmm.
were lapidary statements
to their
critics
okay.
who predicted their early demise.
Lapidary
How's
statements
that?
To their critics. I like that. Okay, that works. I like that.
Suitable
for engraving and
short
training.
And concise to make an elegant point.
Let's see. Put that on a plaque and take it to your next job, right?
Yeah.
I heard that line in a movie last night. That was pretty good. Oh, The Secret Life of Walter Mitty. That was.
Oh, really?
I actually watched that for the first time last night.
Any good?
Yes. I thought it was a fun movie. It was fun. Kept me engaged.
Okay.
Which is the only. I mean, I hate movies that drag, you know, and just kind of lose their point.
One of those things I should watch on the plane for free.
I would.
Yeah.
Sure. I think it's worth a couple hours.
Okay.
Absolutely.
But not investing the $4 or $5 and change.
Not for pay.
Okay, I'll wait for.
I'll wait for
a long trip.
Get it on HBO. You can get it on HBO or something like that. You know, if you've already got the cable or the satellite or whatever, then I wouldn't go pay.
We take advantage of the charter flights.
Perfect.
For that, usually.
Well, then that would be a great way to go then. Yeah, give it a go.
I'll keep it in mind.
All right, way to go, baby, Eric Scalavino, PFW. Let's take the break here, and then let's get your cards and letters, your calls, your tweets coming. Nitpicks. I know you have them. Yes, it's great to be 4-2. Yes, it is good to be back on top of the AFC East Division. Yes, you've got the hated Jets coming to town on Thursday, but there's still some things that need to be attended to. Love to hear your thoughts coming up in the playbook.
NFL Mobile from Verizon is perfect for a guy like me. At home or on the go, NFL Mobile keeps me connected to all the action across the league. I can watch live NFL games on Thursday, Sunday, and Monday nights. Track player and team news, player tweets, watch NFL Network 24/7 and more. Plus, with NFL Mobile, I have real-time access to NFL Red Zone, so I can watch every touchdown from every game on Sunday afternoons. So I'll never be without football. Especially when Jaws and Muffin can't find that oh-so-perfect spot. Oh, hold up. Go, go. That's it. Come on, kick it into hyperdrive. Touchdown! Ha-ha!
Get NFL Mobile on America's largest 4G LTE network and discover why more people choose Verizon than any other network. Call *NFL to download NFL Mobile now. Verizon, official wireless provider of the New England Patriots. Airtime message and data usage applies. Available on select smartphones. Coverage not available everywhere. Don't call or text while driving.
Before Jenny met her new nephew, Wyatt, before she drove to New York, and before she picked up a Boston Red Sox onesie down the street from her Alston studio, Jenny got 1% back on tires, 2% back on snacks, and 3% back on gas using her Bank AmeriCard Cash Rewards credit card. So Jenny got ready to do what she loved with cash rewards she liked. That's the power of the Bank AmeriCard Cash Rewards credit card. That's Bank of America. Life's better when we're connected. With the Bank AmeriCard Cash Rewards credit card, you can earn 1% cash back on all purchases all the time. 2% cash back on groceries and 3% cash back on gas. Apply today at bankofamerica.com/getcashback. Grocery and gas bonus rewards apply to 1,500 in combined purchases each quarter. Call 1-888-224-8735 for details about credit costs and terms. Copyright 2013 Bank of America Corporation.
Ask the rest of the country what comes to mind when they think of New England. The answer isn't Paul Revere or tri-corner hats, maple syrup or Walden Woods. They now think of dominance. The success of the sleeveless hoodie. Three Super Bowl championships, AFC East champions 10 out of the past 12 years, the first NFL dynasty of the millennium. So while the other 44 states now think of us more for our wins than clam chowder, that's fine. Just ask anybody here. The Pats are all we think about, too. Gillette is proud to have played a role in the ascent of the New England Patriots, our New England Patriots. Because the logo hanging high above Gillette Stadium isn't just team sponsorship. It's our declaration of allegiance to the fans from Maine, New Hampshire, Vermont, Massachusetts, Connecticut, and Rhode Island. The New Englanders that have helped make Gillette what we are today. From Boston for New England, we're Gillette, the best a man can get.
It's Jim from Ace Ticket. The New England Patriots are back in action, and Ace Ticket, the Patriots' official fan travel partner, is behind the team, from Foxborough all the way to Arizona. Ace Ticket is your official home for all Boston sports tickets, with free and easy pickup in Kenmore Square, across from the Boston Garden, or game day pickup at Patriot Place. So treat yourself or impress someone. Go to aceticket.com or call 1-800-MY-SEATS. 1-800-MY-SEATS.
Follow the Patriots like never before with the official Patriots mobile apps for iPhone, Android, and iPad. Get instant access to all the latest news, stats, and analysis, plus live Patriots Game Center. Search New England Patriots in your device's app marketplace to get the latest Patriots news, audio, and video in the palm of your hand. Download the official Patriots mobile apps today and stay connected.
Xbox One is not only a game console, but the home entertainment system every fantasy football fan needs. The NFL on Xbox One is your connection to all things fantasy, giving you personalized news, highlights, stats, and scores instantly on your TV. Watching your favorite team play on Sunday, but wondering how your fantasy players are doing? With built-in fantasy football, track your updates on TV in real time across NFL.com and multiple fantasy leagues, all while still watching live games. Xbox One, bringing fantasy football to life. Now available for $3.99. At a Microsoft store near you.
Want to be a Patriots season ticket holder? Join the Patriots season ticket holder waitlist and get in the game. Be first in line to purchase Patriots season tickets as they become available and receive exclusive access to the Patriots ticket exchange and other amenities such as access to playoff tickets, Gillette Stadium concert pre-sales, and much more. Get on the list. Get in the game. Visit Patriots.com/the list to join today.
Orton drops back, fires down the middle, picked off. Ball is intercepted by Jamie Collins. Shotgun snap to Orton. Hit the whistle by Chandler Jones, who had the sack and the recovery.
We've had some big plays on defense, turnovers. So, again, it was a good team win. A lot of people contributed.
Set up by the Collins interception. A first and goal to go out of the eye. Devlin the fullback with Ridley the tailback. Play fake by Bradley. Quick hitter to the end zone. And catch made. Right corner. Touchdown. Tim Wright.
It was awesome. It was fun to be out there. Great team win. A lot of guys made a lot of big plays. So, that's what we're going to need going forward. It's still early in the year, but great to come and get a tough road win. We knew it was going to be 60 minutes. Guys played their butts off.
Four receivers in the pattern. Play fake by Brady. Steps up. Lost the throw deep down the left side. He's looking for Jims. He reaches out. He makes the catch. Tumbling into the end zone. Touchdown, Patriots! Gerard Mayo brought him down. Speaking of Gerard Mayo, he is down on the turf.
And he's holding his right knee.
Patriots leading tackler coming in.
Just slammed his helmet. This doesn't look good.
Again, it was a good team win. A lot of people contributed. Obviously, a little bit bittersweet with Gerard going down.
Now Ridley's hurt.
Yeah, he cut Ridley's right knee.
Is in agony, pounding his right fist on the turf.
But guys got to rally around the guy who steps in there and tries to do a great job. So, you know, It's unfortunate.
Brady has time. Throws down the right side for LaBelle by his lonesome at the 30 to the 25-20. Brandon out of a tackle. Brandon leaping to the end zone. Brandon with a second touchdown of the day. Patriots, as they've done so often through the years, walk off this field of Ralph Wilson Stadium winners. And today by a 37-22 final.
Thanks, Kay Collins. Good job there putting it all together. In a nutshell, that's what happened on Sunday on the 37-22 win over Buffalo. Man with a plan just tweets. He goes, what will New England do now without Ridley for the year? Will they sign a new back up? That's part of what we just discussed with Eric Scalavino. My guess is that they'll certainly take a good hard look at it. But the thought process is that, you know, they do have Jonas Gray coming up from the practice squad, or at least available. I'm sure that they'll give James White, the rookie from Wisconsin, every opportunity as well to help fill the role. And perhaps, who knows, maybe they will try to take advantage of a situation that could be brewing a bit in Pittsburgh with erstwhile Patriot running back LeGarrette Blount not being happy with his current situation. And if you can get him for a song and a dance, or, you know, a draft pick somewhere on down the line that won't cost you much in the long run, would the Patriots entertain doing something like that?
There's another guy out there that would cost you nothing to bring in that was once here.
Who?
The law firm.
Ben Jarvis Green Ellis. Absolutely.
Sitting out there, he got cut by the Bengals.
That's true.
And he was not. That he was supposed and he was, to be fully rehabbed from in the middle of September.
And he wasn't.
He's been sitting out there for a month.
He wasn't picked up at all either.
No,
was
he's
he?
Just
no.
sitting out there.
Well, that
is a guy that knows the system and doesn't fumble.
That one may make the most sense of all.
Probably costs you no money either because he's unemployed. So what he can't command very much.
That's actually an excellent
That's what I came up
thought.
With during the game on Sunday, and Paul and Andy were like, hey, that's the first good idea you've had in years.
Wow. No, I think that's an excellent idea. Yeah, no kidding. That's actually a very good idea. And you know what? I don't know why I didn't think of that before. But, you know, that's why you get paid the big bucks, Kev. Stop laughing hysterically. All right. So here you go. That certainly could be a possibility and something that undoubtedly is going to be looked at, I would think, once they officially decide to do whatever it is they're going to do team-wise with a guy like Ridley. All right. To the phones again, 855-PATS-500. Nitpicks on your mind? We're going to find out here. We're going to start it off with Malachi in Brockton, Mass. Malachi, you're in the playbook.
How y'all doing today?
Good, Malachi.
Well, I have a few things I want to touch on here. You know, we're really out with the knee injury and Gerard Mayo out. You know, I don't really, to me, Shane Vereen is not a guy that I trust running the ball when the box is loaded.
Right.
We've seen that. You know, most of his runs just come with, you know, when the defense was spread it. So I really don't know, you know, how I feel about that. You know, Gerard Mayo's presence is definitely going to be missed. He definitely is a leader. And, you know, he kind of, I think, is what keeps the middle of that defense together. So I just want to, you know, hear your thoughts on that. It seems really good to.
Well, what's the specific question then that you have in mind?
Well, my specific question is, who do you think could be that next man up to come and really.
Well, I honestly believe that, because of the way he's played thus far this year, that Shane Vereen's going to get that opportunity. He has, I believe, started a game already this year anyway, if I'm not mistaken. I have to go back and look at the lineups. Not that that really means a heck of a lot, but I would tell you that I think they'll give him the opportunity if he can produce. Now, in certain situations, we know he's not necessarily a between-the-tackles kind of guy. And that's where a guy like Bolden would fit in. But because Bolden's importance to this team really lies more so in terms of what he does with special teams and all the kick unit teams, I'm not so sure that they turn the ball over to him, but that they give a guy like James White the opportunity, or a guy like Jonas Gray, who's in that big back type of mold that Bolden is as well. They might look internally first before deciding to, you know, go via the trade route or go the free agent route, which a guy like, you know, law firm Ben Jarvis Green Ellis would be.
I'm not even so much sure if I trust Bolden. This is a guy who's only averaging 1.7 yards a run.
Well, also consider, though, that he hasn't been asked to do much more than that.
Yeah.
You got to consider the situation. If it's third and one or third and two and you only need him to get one or two, you know, teams are going to be stacked. If he's in the game, teams are going to be stacked to stop him. So, you know, you got to look at it, you know, situationally. I don't look at averages as much as I look at the play and the situation involved.
Okay, one other question, though.
Yep.
My other question to you is, you know, Tim Wright, you know, he had a big game during the Bengals, and then, you know, he was kind of ineffective, you know, during that Bills game. We didn't use him like we did during the Bengals. Can you kind of give me, you know, why do you think that is?
Why against the Bengals?
No, against the Bills. You know, he had a big game, you know, and I figured that they were going to carry that momentum, you know, sometimes over to the Bills, but, you know, we kind of didn't do that.
Well, I would say, you know, first of all, Malachi, that's probably as good a nitpick as any, but you spread the offense around quite well, and when it looks like Rob Gronkowski is very, very close to being the Gronk of old, why would you take targets away from him?
Yeah.
I mean, Tim Wright caught a touchdown pass, did he not?
Yes, he did, yeah.
Okay. Then all I'm saying is that when you target him, he needs to come through. He did. I consider that a step in the right direction.
All right, Tim, thank you.
Sure. Thanks for the phone call. Here's our buddy Steve in Killeen, Texas. Steve, you're up next in the playbook.
Hey, afternoon, John.
Hey, Steve.
Great job by Kevin Collins with the montage.
It's always good, isn't it? Get your blood's juices going.
The frustration of your alma mater in the game of only losing by
No. There's no moral victories at all. Not in the Red River rivalry, you know. And I told Strippers as much. But you know what? He knows that. He knows that his team was lucky because Texas shot itself on the foot last weekend.
Yeah. All in all, a great game.
It was a very good game. I was just, you know, I'm like, man, they're stupid. They're just stupid. And I put that on the coaching staff. So now it's up to the coaching staff to get rid of the stupid.
Yeah, my nit was, you know, Scott Chandler looking like Gronk up the seam on our defense, but, you know, in part that's understandable when Mayo goes out.
Yep.
Third and longs, John. The difference was we were able to convert those this week, and, you know, that was fortunate. But, you know, I'm hoping that we pick up with the momentum and, as I said before, keep the level of piss-offedness where it needs to be.
I love that. That's got to be the next word of the day, piss-offedness.
with the level, you know, my whole attitude is I'm hoping that we toss the Jets a beating like Frazier, Foreman, Ali, and Tyson in his prime and leave no doubt about the momentum and where this team really is.
Yeah.
Great surprise in Tim Wright channeling his inner Moss.
Mm-hmm.
That was an unbelievable catch.
Yeah, and we liked the splitting of the defense sign that he gave after it, very much in the Randy Moss mode after he caught the touchdown. I thought that was kind of cool. I mean, I was like, wow, who the heck is that Randy Moss out there? I mean,
unbelievable catch.
It was great. Yeah, it was great.
And Jones on the other side of the ball with the strip sack.
Yeah, yeah.
Recovery. It just, you know, it was kind of the perfect storm with everything aligning the way it needed to. And just Tom in the pocket of what there was of a pocket, just dealing with the situation in the second half of just stepping up and making the plays. And my hope is that what we produced in the second half of this Bills game becomes kind of the standard going forward, because scoring on every possession is definitely possible with the weapons that we now have.
Sure, sure.
And, you know, on the running back front, you know, if we can get Benny back for, you know, a Subway sandwich and a big gulp, I say let's make that happen.
Well, listen, I would be actually for that, because I think we saw what kind of effect a pounding, bruising running back could have last year, you know, if you could get him for the song and the dance. Now, I don't know internally if this has been discussed in the 48 hours or so since it was discovered that Ridley was going to be done, but I think it's at least, I hope it's at least being kicked around, you know, in the offices down the hallway here, because I think that would charge up a lot of people, not only fan-wise and media-wise, but it might even in this locker room, because, again, it was a business decision why he left. Nothing more, nothing less.
And, you know, and even looking at Blount, to get him back, LeGarrette to Carson Blount, first trauma would be nice as well. But,
yep,
you know, not knowing exactly what the particulars of that situation are, I personally would love to see Benny, you know, come back and wear a patch uniform again.
I think there's two really good possibilities there between those two guys. And whichever one you can make happen, you should probably go make happen.
A la Deion Branch, where, you know, he kind of yo-yoed and kept coming back. And
sure,
every time he turned, he produced.
Yeah, so, right, exactly. Know. Why not? Why not? Both guys are certainly familiar with the offense, so why wouldn't you bring it? Makes a lot of sense to get him up to speed and get him back in there.
And heck, if we could get Teddy back and Troy back this year, I'd take them too.
Yeah, no kidding. We'd need that right now anyway, I would tell you that.
every down Brown and Brisky run in the middle.
Absolutely. Could use something like that right now, no question.
And I know it's coming, John. Somehow, you know, the shoemaker that is Belichick and the Elves managed to cobble it together, and we constantly shake our heads in wonderment. So, you know, from Bill we trust, and on to the Jets, my friend.
You got it.
All right, take care, John.
Thanks, Steve. Good to hear from you again. Let's go to Justin in Virginia. Justin, you're up next in the playbook.
Hey, what's going on, John? You're getting it done as usual.
Thank you, sir.
As for my nitpick, my number one nitpick, I know this is being kind of harsh, and I know this is only one play, but I remember there was one play earlier in this Bills game where Brian Timms, and I think it was 6 or 7 seconds, he ran past basically the whole secondary. Mm-hmm. He got visibly behind the safety, and Brady overthrew it to him, and I was like, oh, my God. Like, he would have had two amazing catches if Brady wouldn't have overthrown that, because the guy was behind the safety. My other nitpick is Alfonso, Dennard, Ryan, and Arrington all on the outside. They have no coverage, none. And I think Malcolm Butler should be higher on the outside cornerback depth chart than Arrington at this point. I'm sorry, the little bit he showed me in the preseason is more than Arrington showed me most of his career. He's terrible on the outside. Mm-hmm. I think the O-line sucks as usual, and when Stork comes back, he needs to give some of those middle guys a good old-fashioned smack in the head, because that was terrible.
Yeah.
But
yeah, I can't argue with your nitpicks. I think you bring up a good point. I think that while, you know, Arrington hasn't done anything really to cause the team irreparable harm this year, it's pretty clear to see that, you know, when they get him isolated, he's always a step behind a receiver. So his best role, really the only role that he should be playing, is in a nickel or a dime situation. And considering that, I think you'll probably see that again potentially this week against the Jets, only because you're going to be, you know, left with fewer linebackers involved. And I would expect the Patriots probably to tend to go heavy, which means then you might not necessarily get that nickel situation that you're looking for in the secondary. You want to try to do whatever you can to make sure that you've got coverage, you know, over the top that helps, because, you know, we saw, I think, Revis take another step toward being the best, you know, corner cover in the league again, because he completely shut down, you know, Sammy Watkins for the most part. I think, you know, McCourty is more than adequate. I think Patrick Chung is having a fantastic year. He's looking like the Chung that we saw, you know, basically, I think, in his first year here. And he's starting to bring the thump a little bit more. So I think the strong safety role right now is definitely his to lose. He's also done pretty well in coverage that I've seen. So, you know, our real issue is at the other corner. Dennard shows flashes of brilliance, and then he shows flashes of complete, you know, I don't know what.
Yeah, and I don't think Browner is the answer at all. I watched some of this tape when he was with Seattle with Earl Thomas and Richard Sherman on the outside. I watched the Colts game they were in. T.Y. Hilton got 140 yards, mm-hmm. most of which was all on Browner. He practically annihilated him deep. The thing with Browner is he's the ultimate tease, because he's so big, but he's slow. He's slow. He cannot cover. I'm sorry. He may be good in, like, red zone situations, but he cannot keep up with a guy. But as for the running back situation you addressed with Eric earlier, I think Benny is a little too old. I think when you're a plotter and you lose a step, then usually you're kind of out the league. But I think Jonas Gray is the most likely guy. I can't see LeGarrette Blount coming at – well, I can see it, but I don't think it's very likely because of the money situation. I don't think he's going to want what we're going to want to pay him. But I think Jonas Gray is the guy. They kept him on the practice squad. I think Bill likes the guy. I think he's the guy. But thank you, John.
All right, I appreciate it, Justin. Thank you. That could very well end up being the case. But a lot of it, you know, money-wise, is already predetermined based on his contract with Pittsburgh. As far as Blount's concerned, it's just the Patriots, do they want to pick it up? That's the big issue. I'd say right now they probably would not. But again, I don't want to rule anything out. If you can get him for a song and a dance because of the impact that he had last year, basically in helping to carry this team to the playoffs a year ago. Let's not forget what he meant to this team a year ago. They just didn't want to give that much money to a player that they thought would end up sharing the role this year again with a guy like Ridley or a guy like Vereen. Right now, he wouldn't have to share the role too much because of what happened to Ridley. Eldridge in North Carolina. Hey, Eldridge.
Hey, John. How you doing, man?
Good, buddy.
Great show as usual. But well, like I was telling Kevin, I didn't get to see the game because I was in West Virginia. Charles, matter of fact, Randy Moss on town.
What, they don't have TV in West Virginia?
They didn't play it. They didn't show the Patriots. They were showing the Bengals and the Durham Carolina game.
Oh, gotcha.
That's what they were showing. But I saw a little bit on my iPhone, you know, special moments or whatever. But my nitpick is, like Justin said, O-line and our safety. I know you said Chung looked pretty good, but Chung got burned a lot, too. So did Arrington. So did Ryan. And I'm like, I don't know if it's the wrong technique or they ain't catching on or something. I don't know what it is, but.
Well, I have more of a problem right now with Arrington than I do Chung, and I've always had that problem with Arrington. But, you know, utilizing him in as in a nickel role has limited his liability. It's just that when he gets isolated and he gets exposed and the other team takes advantage of it, right now they're not really able to do that more than a couple of times a game because of his infrequent appearances on the field. So, you know, as compared to the starters. So if he's going to remain a contributing factor defensively, I don't think he needs to go – beyond that.
Well, and speaking of my buddy Brian Kim, that's Randy Moss' clone. Matter of fact, Randy trained him for a little bit.
Yeah.
So that's why he's wearing his number. And I was telling PFW guys earlier, that's going to be your deep threat. They said, oh, he just got garbage time doing preseason. Yeah, but he's most effective doing garbage time.
Yeah, I think we saw their confidence in going to him. It was great to see him come up big. He certainly is not afraid to go up in traffic. He's got the physical ability. He's got the hands. He's got all the tools. But again, just because he scored one doesn't necessarily mean that he's going to be the answer, you know, going downfield. I'm glad they took the shot, but they've taken shots this year already and they haven't come up. This, you know, week they finally came up with one. Maybe it took Timms's, skill set to complete the pass.
You can't do it with Edelman, man. Too slow. Short. Can't do it with him. And then LaFell surprised me, honestly. Because I'm thinking, okay, well, he had flashes like that with Carolina anyway.
Mm-hmm.
Some games, you're like, man, where he come from?
Mm-hmm.
But my other thing, what you're saying about the running back and the linebacker, I hate that for Mayo. I really hate that for Stephen Ridley because I'm a Stephen Ridley fan. But, man, I'm like you. If LeBlanc can be a guy for five, for a fifth round draft pick, I'll go get him. Benny, no. Jonas Gray showed that he was dropping fumbles, doing preseason a lot. He's young, too. But I'm saying, no. If I want somebody to carry me just like he did last year, I'll go get LeBlanc. And I'll try to get Anderson back. He'll stabilize that linebacker court.
Yeah.
That's what I can think of.
Yeah, you could certainly look at that. I'm not sure what, you know, his contract situation might be, but we might try to explore that a little bit further later on. Eldridge, that's good stuff out of you. All right, we're going to take a timeout here. Eric Friends, who covers the AFC East for Boston.com, he's a contributor on Tuesdays here in the playbook on Nitpick Tuesdays. We'll get his nitpicks from Sunday's game over Buffalo and start to turn that page toward the JETS Thursday night on the Thursday night game. Plus, we'll continue with your emails and your calls. webradio@patriots.com, 855-PATS-500. Coming up in the playbook.
NFL Mobile from Verizon is perfect for a guy like me. At home or on the go, NFL Mobile keeps me connected to all the action across the league. I can watch live NFL games on Thursday, Sunday, and Monday nights. Track player and team news, player tweets, watch NFL Network 24/7 and more. Plus, with NFL Mobile, I have real-time access to NFL Red Zone, so I can watch every touchdown from every game on Sunday afternoons. So I'll never be without football. Especially when Jaws and Muffin can't find that oh-so-perfect spot. Oh, hold up.
Go, go. That's it. Come on, kick it into hyperdrive. Touchdown!
Get NFL Mobile on America's largest 4G LTE network and discover why more people choose Verizon than any other network. Call ** NFL to download NFL Mobile now. Verizon, official wireless provider of the New England Patriots. Airtime message and data usage applies. Available on select smartphones. Coverage not available everywhere. Don't call or text while driving.
Before Jenny met her new nephew, Wyatt, before she drove to New York, and before she picked up a Boston Red Sox onesie down the street from her Alston studio, Jenny got 1% back on tires 2% back on snacks, and 3% back on gas using her Bank AmeriCard Cash Rewards credit card. So Jenny got ready to do what she loved with cash rewards she liked. That's the power of the Bank AmeriCard Cash Rewards credit card. That's Bank of America. Life's better when we're connected. With the Bank AmeriCard Cash Rewards credit card, you can earn 1% cash back on all purchases all the time, 2% cash back on groceries, and 3% cash back on gas. Apply today at bankofamerica.com/getcashback. Grocery and gas bonus rewards apply to 1,500 in combined purchases each quarter. Call 1-888-224-8735 for details about credit costs and terms. Copyright 2013 Bank of America Corporation.
Ask the rest of the country what comes to mind when they think of New England. The answer isn't Paul Revere or Tri-Corner Hats, maple syrup or Walden Woods. They now think of dominance. The success of the sleeveless hoodie, 3 Super Bowl championships, AFC East champions 10 out of the past 12 years, the first NFL dynasty of the millennium. So while the other 44 states now think of us more for our wins than clam chowder, that's fine. Just ask anybody here. The Pats are all we think about, too. Gillette is proud to have played a role in the ascent of the New England Patriots, our New England Patriots. Because the logo hanging high above Gillette Stadium isn't just team sponsorship. It's our declaration of allegiance to the fans from Maine, New Hampshire, Vermont, Massachusetts, Connecticut, and Rhode Island. The New Englanders that have helped make Gillette what we are today. From Boston for New England, we're Gillette, the best a man can get.
It's Jim from Ace Ticket. The New England Patriots are back in action, and Ace Ticket, the Patriots' official fan travel partner, is behind the team, from Foxborough all the way to Arizona. Ace Ticket is your official home for all Boston sports tickets, with free and easy pickup in Kenmore Square, across from the Boston Garden, or game day pickup at Patriot Place. So treat yourself or impress someone. Go to aceticket.com or call 1-800-MY-SEATS.
Didn't like what you saw from the hometown team last Sunday?
Brady's under center. Counteraction. Play fake by Brady. Under rush. Down he goes. Tom with no chance. Sacked by Jerry Hughes. Back at the 23.
Well, John didn't either. Sucky, sucky, sucky. It's Nitpick Tuesday on Patriots Playbook. Phone in your nitpicks on the Ace Ticket Hotline at 855-PATS-500 or email them to webradio@patriots.com. Now back to the nitwit, nitpick master himself, John Rook.
Yep, that's me. Picking nits as we always do on Tuesday, but a different feel to today because, number one, you did have a resounding win on the road. It does give you first place in the division again, but, you know, as Tom Brady said, as Bill Belichick said after the game.
Stupid thing.
Yeah, I did like that, the little microphone escapade he had there. I love it. That's technology for you. There is a sort of a feeling of sadness, a pall that was kind of cast over that locker room in the aftermath with the injuries to Stephen Ridley and Gerard Mayo. Eric Friends covers the Patriots and the AFC East, primarily for Boston.com, also for Bleacher Report, and he's actually in studio with us today before he has to get busy and get work done today down the hallway. I'm glad you're face-to-face this time, Eric.
Yeah, it's nice to see you. Nice to be in this setting. Nice to not have my voice.
This is the shrine right here. What do you think, huh?
Yeah, it's nice to not sound like I'm underwater for once.
No, you don't sound like I'm underwater. That's just the way, you know, they pay the bills around here.
That's just the way the production goes sometimes.
Just the way it works. All right, so let's start then overall with your impressions from Sunday. We definitely have seen, you know, I mean, anytime your offense can score 80 points combined in 2 weeks, you're doing something right. I think that they almost did that in spite of the uneven play on the offensive front again on Sunday as well. There was more shuffling of the deck. A lot of that was because of the injuries that had taken place last week and even during the game to Dan Connolly in particular. What do we attribute, though, in your estimation, the increased productivity continuing?
Well, that's a good question. I mean, Brady always says offensive football is 11 guys, and yeah. I feel like sometimes he's talking in coach speak where he's not trying to give away anything, but I feel like he's got a point. And over the past couple of weeks, I think we've seen that, you know, when the protection is there, Brady is doing a better job of taking advantage of it. And that was a problem earlier in the season when, you know, they wouldn't necessarily have the protection all the time, but even when they had some protection, when Brady had some semblance of a pocket to step into, he wasn't taking advantage. There were inaccurate throws. There were passes that were batted and other such, you know, inconsistencies on the offense. But overall, I just feel like when the opportunities are there, the offense is taking advantage. Guys are getting open more frequently. We've seen a lot more out of Brandon LaFell over the past few weeks. Julian Edelman's still doing his thing. Rob Gronkowski's up to
looking
his game
more
as
like
well.
Gronk.
Absolutely. Yep. Yep. So I feel like it's across the board, a lot of things are going right for the Patriots.
Can I also throw in something that we dropped in the opening hour of the program in case, you know, it was missed by any of our listeners as well. But part of the reason here is because the defense, and in spite of, you know, Mayo's absence, you know, and what have you, later in the game, the defense is turning the other team over and giving the offense plenty of good, shorter field opportunities. I mean, they didn't miss on an opportunity on a possession in the second half Sunday against Buffalo, and they scored all 13 of the first half points directly from turnovers on Sunday. They don't get that. They might not win that game.
Yeah, absolutely. And, I mean, even in the first game of the season where, you know, they had the Dolphins, they were up 20-10 on the Dolphins. That was also off of three turnovers. And then when the turnovers stopped coming in the second half, that's when the Dolphins turned the game around and ended up winning that game. So, I mean, I feel like one of the kind of knocks on the defense over the past, you know, few years or so has been that they're opportunistic in the sense that they don't necessarily get stops. When they do, it's usually a turnover or a big play on third down or something like that. And I feel like, you know, when they do have the opportunities, the offense has to take advantage. And certainly they've been doing that over the past few weeks.
What are your thoughts on how the Patriots, Eric, might at least initially decide to fill these large voids, one on offense with Ridley's absence and one on defense with Mayo's absence? I mean, again, we've already kicked around a couple of ideas, but I'm curious to know what your opinion might be. See if we can't kind of create a little bit of a consensus here, because clearly the team doesn't look like they're going to do anything drastic, certainly before Thursday night's game.
No, there's not enough time. I mean, at this point, you know, it's hard enough for a guy to come in and get added to the roster midweek and pick up the team or pick up the offense in a quick enough span that they can actually contribute in a meaningful way on game day. So I feel like this week is out of the question for adding somebody like that. You know, we'll probably see a lot more of Brandon Bolden in the backfield, and he's, you know, he's more to Ridley's style in terms of between the tackles guy, more of a hard-nosed runner. He leaves some yards on the field at times, so they may want to, you know, look at other guys like Jonas Gray, who they have on the practice squad.
Right.
But they have something there with Bolden. I think that, and he's really good in blitz protection. We've seen him do a really good job in that role and on special teams as well. So he definitely still has a role on the team. Like I said, Jonas Gray will probably get a look at some point to come off the practice squad. In terms of linebacker, I think Deontay Skinner was the guy that filled in for them on Sunday.
Yeah.
I would expect to see more of him. He's come in a lot with Dante Hightower being out as well. He was in a lot with Jamie Collins being out. So he's clearly, at this point, they view him as their fourth linebacker. So I would see a bigger role for him. We might see Darius Fleming get called up off the practice squad. I liked what I saw from him in training camp.
Agreed.
I thought he was, I think he has more of the Jerod Mayo style of play, where he can move around in space a bit. He has some questions with some knee injuries he's had in the past, but I think he could at least, you know, he could fill that role. I think Deontay Skinner is probably the better of the two for that specific role.
Which is why Skinner is already active and was on the roster as it now stands. Now, let me ask you this. We'll play a little what if here, because, again, a couple of the ideas we kicked around with two guys, especially on the offensive side, that potentially one is available, one might be available, depends on what the price you would be to pay for him. What about a guy like Benjarvis Green-Ellis coming back, or a relatively disgruntled, it appears, LeGarrette Blount in Pittsburgh may be available for a relative song and a dance?
Yeah, I've heard the Green-Ellis name thrown around quite a bit, and I'm not really sure where he's at this point. I know that he was cast off in Cincinnati because of his contract, really. They drafted Jeremy Hill to kind of fill that same role that he had. Mm-hmm. And And obviously, when you're paying a guy on a rookie contract, you don't want to pay Ben Jarvis Green Ellis, a veteran, $3 million to do the exact same thing. So I feel like that situation was maybe a little bit less of a statement on his level of play than it was, you know, their situation at running back for Cincinnati. So, I mean, there may be still something left in the tank there. I think it would be worth it to at least look into it if whatever the Patriots are getting out of guys like Brandon Bolden and Jonas Gray proves to not be enough. But as far as Blunt goes, I mean, is he still on the Steelers? I'm pretty sure, yeah. So I don't know that there's anything there necessarily. I know that Blunt didn't necessarily have any ill feelings toward the Patriots when
he
left.
It was a purely business decision,
right?
Because he thought, you know, he would command more money, which he did in the marketplace, and the Patriots wanted to pay a guy who they still looked at as a share, you know, a job share type of player.
Right. And my only question then is, you know, if the Steelers signed Blunt to whatever contract they signed him to.
I think it was a 2-year deal.
Yeah, and are the Patriots going to want to trade for that contract, or would
right.
they rather, you know, wait it out, see if they end up cutting him and then sign him on the free agent market, or would they trade him and then, you know, only under the agreement that he would restructure his contract once he got here? So those are some situations to take into account as well.
Yeah,
it's a 2-year deal.
What's that?
Blunt's a 2-year deal.
It is a 2-year deal. Thank you.
$3.85 million, and he got almost $1 million in a signing bonus.
Well, see, then they wouldn't be responsible for the signing bonus that's
right.
already done.
Mm-hmm.
So then you're looking at a prorated portion of that, plus the 1 year would be worth what, probably the 2.8. Here we're looking at what, about 1.4?
Yeah, probably
ish.
Yeah, it's about half the season's over. So
that's, I mean,
that's not much.
That's not much.
No,
not for a running back. Not for. I mean, I realize that it's probably still more than maybe they were willing to pay him. What did they pay him last year? About $900,000.
Yeah, not
like
much.
So it's really not a heck of a lot. And you've got a definitive need, and you got a guy that clearly proved himself. I mean, you could literally say he helped carry that team to the AFC Championship game last year.
He did, and he knows the system. So that's another thing going in his favor too. One question that I have with Blunt though is that I feel like down the stretch he kind of got exposed. I mean, in the AFC Championship game, the Broncos were loading up 8 men in the box, and the Patriots really had no clear response to it. And Blunt himself, I mean, granted, it's hard for any back to beat an 8-man front, but the yards just weren't there. And at one point, I think the Patriots just gave up on it with, I think, 6 carries for 11 yards in the first half. And then I don't think he touched the ball in the second half.
Yeah.
So I think that was a situation where, you know, they learned what Blunt is. And I think there's a role for a guy like that on the team, especially if Vereen is still playing in that pass catching role. But I think Blunt, they know what he is at this point, and if he's available, they'll go after him. But otherwise, I'm not sure.
Well, it's worth considering anyway, because there are certainly going to be, I think, there's going to be a lot of thought given to how you best replace these guys. Defensively, you know, you talked about Skinner. My guess is for Thursday night's game against the Jets, you're in such a short week, and because the Jets, when they do things well, and they haven't done a lot well in a 1-5 start for them, they run the ball, and
right.
they run the ball pretty well. And so you might see more of the heavy defensive package,
mm-hmm.
The 5-2 front maybe a little bit, like you saw this last week against Buffalo. You might see that again on Thursday because, frankly, personnel-wise, that might be best what New England is suited to.
Yeah, absolutely. And the Jets, I mean, they have a fullback, John Connor, on the roster, so they do like to use those two back sets and go a little bit heavy. So we might see some of the, like you said, the 5-2, some 3-4. But I do think that this is still most likely going to be a 3-4 front. I think that's probably their best bet. And one guy who I think fits into that who hasn't really gotten enough recognition is Zach Moore. He played, I think, around 12 snaps against the Bills this past week, and mostly as a defensive end in that 3-man line. So there's a possibility there that he could be a guy who fills in where Chandler Jones was not quite effective in that role. He was better in a stand-up role. They might have Zach Moore down on the line instead.
All right, before we give up totally on the offensive side as well, I'm going to go back, though, to the running back deal, because there's an email here from Tim who says, what are the odds of James White coming up and being active in a role? I know people were high on him early in the preseason, and then he fell off toward the beginning mm-hmm. of the season. And then what are your thoughts of Amendola finally being gone this next offseason? Mm-hmm. Let's take White first.
All right, well, James White actually won one of the Practice Player of the Week awards this past week. So, I mean, that's not necessarily, they're not putting him in Canton or anything, but certainly he's making some progress, they feel. Otherwise, they wouldn't have given him that award. And I do think that there's at least a possibility that he could get called up sometime in the next couple of weeks to make a big contribution. But as far as Amendola goes, I feel like it'll be interesting to see how that evolves, because they do have an option, I think, to get out of his contract after this season. And his contributions so far have been next to nothing. So I wouldn't be surprised surprised at all if they asked him to restructure. Maybe he would take a restructured deal, just based on the fact that he, you know, like I said, he hasn't really produced since he's gotten here, and especially this season. So, I mean, there's definitely a possibility that he could be gone after this year.
Yeah, I'm kind of leaning toward that myself. But provided you were able to find somebody that can, I mean, right now, he's basically looked as Julian Edelman light.
Right.
If something happened to Edelman, you know Amendola is going to get put in the slot.
Mm-hmm.
Because they really view him more as a slot rather than as an outside, you know, receiver, which is, I think, what a lot of people thought he was before he got here.
Yeah, a lot of, and there was, I mean, I was one of the people, and there were a lot of them, who felt like Amendola would be an upgrade over Welker because of what he could do on the outside. There were some signs of him being an effective outside receiver when he was in St. Louis. Those just haven't really come to light since he's been in New England for whatever reason. So, so whether, you know, whether that's just a function of how defenses are playing him or how the Patriots are using him, really unclear, but certainly has not been a good go of it for Amendola in a Patriots uniform.
855-PATS-500 is the toll-free telephone number. Trey in Memphis is in the playbook with Eric Friends. Hey, Trey.
Hey, guys, how's it going?
Good.
Yeah, man, this was those were our two big blows, man, that we sustained this past Sunday. I mean, but I think from a defensive schematic standpoint, I mean, we've endured this once before. So, and I think that throughout going through it last year, we're going to have a better feel as to how to replace Mayo. I mean, I'm not saying, you know, that we're going to have a guy that will be able to really duplicate everything that he did. I mean, but I think from a physical perspective, I think that Deontay Skinner can do it. I mean, like I said, I live in the heart of SEC country, man, and I saw this guy play a lot of football.
Mm-hmm.
And I saw him live, and I mean, there's no doubt in my mind, you know, that from a physical standpoint, I mean, he could get a lot of the same things done that Mayo have. I mean, but as far as the true knowledge of the defense, I think, you know, that'll be a work in progress.
No arguments with what you got to say right there. I think that they'll certainly give Deontay Skinner every opportunity to sort of fill the role. I think that it's of really utmost importance right now to get Dante Hightower back in the field. I mean, we're all considering that that's a fait accompli, and I realize he was a late scratch potentially on Sunday against Buffalo, but I mean, I think you got to make sure that with a short work week that he didn't have any setbacks now, get him back in the field, because he's the guy that probably wears the green dot, I would assume, number one, and number two, probably fills Mayo's spot right there in the middle.
Yeah, and the thing is,
the thing with that one, guys, I mean, Dante Hightower basically came out and said to himself that he's not as comfortable playing the middle back. I mean, playing the inside linebacker spot, and he feels more comfortable being able to roam on the outside. I mean, so I don't know. I mean, cause he's playing good on the outside, and I don't want to mess this up, man. I mean, because you know, he's not thinking as much as he was on last year throughout taking over from Mayo. I mean, I think it's going to slow him down. I mean, what do you guys think about this?
All right. Okay, hang on just a second, Trey, because I want to throw one more thing out at Eric before I let him go, only because they've changed the locker room time on you. Just get that alert?
I did just get that alert.
Okay, all right. Very quickly, what are your thoughts on having the quick turnaround against the Jets and how that might affect preparation for this team?
Well, it's going to affect both teams, but I think, you know, the Patriots have had some injuries. The Jets have had some injuries of their own as well. Dee Milliner out for the season, so their secondary is pretty banged up. Right. I think both teams are going to have a tough go of it, but I don't know that there's an advantage for either team in a situation like this. I think, you know, I think the Jets are as much game plan oriented as the Patriots are in terms of them, you know, switching things up from week to week. So I think it'll be really interesting to see how the two teams respond to each other and some of the weaknesses that have been shown on both sides early on.
All right, good stuff. Go do your work then.
All right, thanks a lot, John.
Thanks. Eric Friends again covers the AFC East and the Patriots for Boston.com and for the Bleacher Report, and he's got to get off to the locker room because they just moved up the interview time, so he's got to go talk to the players. All right, let me get back then. Trey, you still with me there, buddy?
Yes, sir.
All right, anything else for you today?
Well, I really would love to see Jonas Gray. I'd love to see what he can do. I mean, because, James White he's a good player, man, but, like, we need an inside-the-tackle guy. And I think Jonas Gray will provide that punch that we need. All right, John, I'll talk to you on tomorrow, man.
Good stuff, Trey. Thank you, buddy. Appreciate that. 855-PATS-500, the toll-free telephone number. Ace Ticket Hotline, 508-298-0398. Also rolls right into our studios here at Gillette Stadium in Foxborough.
By the way, I just got an offline message here from our friend Kat in Chicago.
Yes.
She's too sick to call in. I think she's got a hairball, you know, deep down.
No, that's not right.
She's coughing.
That's not right. I hope she feels, you feel better, Kat.
She said all this talk of Amendola is making her want to scream because she just hates the guy. And anyone who says that they thought he could replace Welker or was better than Welker, she just wants to beat up.
She wants to beat up.
So that was her message to you.
Well, I don't think she's going to find too many people, though, that would think that, especially not right now.
She's a tough cookie. I wouldn't want to fight her.
No.
So I'm just going to say Amendola sucks.
I won't go quite that far. I'd just say he's not quite been what we thought he could be. We'll leave it at that. And unless something changes radically, drastically over the course of the last 10 weeks of this season, I agree with Eric Friends. I certainly think it'll be a difficult thing for the Patriots to bring him back unless it's at a substantial discount for the last year or so of his contract. All right, so you've got time now to light up the phones. If you got your nitpick still from Sunday's game, or if you want to go ahead and start turning the page toward the Jets, as we've tried to do a little bit today, being a sort of a combination. Big Matt texted a little while ago, tweeted a little while ago more specifically, and he said, is this a combination hashtag nitpick Tuesday, hashtag WTF Wednesday? And I said, and I hadn't really had a chance to respond to that tweet yet, and I would have to say, yes, it is. And then tomorrow's program will be WTF Wednesday / Prediction Thursday. Make any sense to you at all? We have to kind of do two shows in one, two shows in one day over the 2 days, because there won't be a playbook on Thursday, because we have to give way to pregame social and all the good stuff for the game Thursday night. So we're kind of doing short duty here. So, yes, what the focus Wednesday? A little bit. And that's kind of what we're doing here in hour number two of the playbook on a Tuesday. So if you've got your thoughts as well, 855-PATS-500. Good time to climb aboard and do some talking. If you've never called the show before, come on. We won't bite, I promise. Gabe writes via email. He says, John, happy Friday via Bill's schedule. And yes, we've discussed this. This is Friday, technically, on the game week schedule. Since it's a short week, I have a few short nitpicks. False starts by the veteran O-lineman. Okay, this is a little like a steering wheel in my pants, driving me nuts. Really?
What the hell does that mean? A steering wheel in my pants?
I don't.
Was that you or was that the email?
No, that was the email.
Oh. I don't get it.
Do I really need to get graphic for you?
The steering wheel? Why would... Is it...
Well, driving?
What? Like, if you said, like a shift or, you know, a joystick or something like that, it would make more sense.
I think it would be probably, it's driving my nuts or driving your nuts.
What? I don't get it.
Gabe, you may need to contact Kevin and explain it to
him. If his is circular, then I want to see it. That's all I want to say.
No, you don't.
Fred will want it. He likes watching
Fred
his videos.
He says, every week, every time, I'm going to leave it right there. Every week, every time, it's a key pivotal spot in the game, and bang, 5 yards back, it's got to stop. You know, that was one of my main nitpicks this week in writing the View from Above column here on the website. We keep haranguing on it, but it's gotten to a point now, really, where it's just a lack of internal discipline, and there has to be some repercussion. Now, you might also say, well, there can't be any repercussion because you're short of bodies and somebody's got to play the position. Granted. That's why it's incumbent upon the coaches to pay attention to the little things, and I just don't think that's being paid enough attention to right now, and that's my major nitpick with all of the procedure penalties. Now, we had a lot of that happen this last week because of the crowd noise involved, but I think they had more, and I have to go back and check it, but I'm pretty sure they had more procedure calls in Buffalo than they did in Kansas City, and Kansas City's the loudest place in the NFL. There's just no excuse for not hearing the call. There's no excuse. They work on this with silent signals and silent calls and silent snap counts every week. There's no excuse. It's on the individual. And if the individual can't figure it out, get out and put somebody in that can do it. Gabe also says, bring in Gray for Ridley. Give Edelman a break. Put Amendola on punt returns. So when he gets hurt, we can put him on IR and bring in another DB. And then next man up for Mayo. I actually think that Amendola on punt returns would not be a bad idea. That way you'd be able to get some worth out of him. But it's pretty hard to take a guy who basically led the NFL in punt return yardage a year ago to put him out of the lineup.
He's also, they said on the broadcast on Sunday, he's in the top 10 in punt return yardage in the history of the NFL.
He's also, I believe, within earshot now of overtaking Troy Brown. I think he's second all-time in Patriots history already in punt returns yards, and it looks like he's got more than a fair opportunity to pass TB80 on that one. So, you know, it's hard for me to, you know, to see that when you've got the kind of production you're getting out of Julian Edelman. And then Gabe says, must stay with a run, even if it doesn't work. It only helps sell play action. And I think that that's something that they did on Sunday, even against Buffalo's number one ranked run defense in the NFL. And I think you'll see them continue to punch it. Clay from Foster, Rhode Island writes, John, the player I think that would be an obvious choice to replace Ridley is the law firm. Now, I don't think he's on anybody's squad right now. That's true. Let's get Benny back. I love that guy. No fumbles. He's a power runner, knows our system. If not him, we should certainly try to get Blunt back. Well, as we've discussed already, Clay, I think both guys would have to be on the table. There are pluses and minuses to both guys. Whether or not you think Benny's got any gas left in the tank, or whether or not you can get Blunt at a decent piece of coin. I think that's what both of those two players' return hinge on. My nitpick, he says, is the horrible running game. It isn't just the backs. They look out of sync with the O-line. No lanes to run through. The O-line is the key to the entire offense. When is this shoulder experiment going to get Brady killed? I don't know what to say about Nate Solder. I'm very disappointed. He clearly has played the last couple of years way better than he has this year. I don't know if it's so much that he's just having physical issues. He's not responding to the way he's being coached, or he misses his binky buddy next to him in Logan Mankins. I don't know. It might be a little bit of each. It might be none of the above. But he clearly is not having the type of year that you expect your franchise left tackle to have. And if he continues to have an up-and-down year where, you know, every once in a while he's going to, you know, struggle against speed rushers like Jerry Hughes, like he did on Sunday, then this has to clearly be reevaluated in the offseason. I don't think now is the time or effort, the time or place to do that, because, you know, he's one of the few healthy guys, relatively speaking, you have on the offensive line. So he's going to be in there, Clay. I don't know what to tell you. I think that Josh McDaniels did a great job in formulating the game plan this last week to minimize the pressure that Buffalo was bringing. And I think you're going to have to continue to see that from the offensive game plan against a particular defense every week in order to minimize the liabilities that you have in the offensive line. That means running game, yes. If that means quick-hitting passing game, yes. If that means guys running crisper routes, you know, and then getting yards after the catch like we saw from LaFell this last week, then yes. All of the above. That means getting more from Gronk? Absolutely yes. And we saw him take another big step back to being the Gronk of old this last week. No question. Other guys will also have to step up. But Solder experiment's here to stay for the year, if you call it an experiment. And then, like I said, it'll need a reevaluation in the offseason. Reno says, why don't we trade Amendola? I know he hasn't shown any worth, but someone has to be desperate for a slot receiver. What do you think we'd get? Right now, nothing. Got another year to go in his contract. The Patriots would potentially be able to get out of it if they don't get him to renegotiate, which my guess, and again, we got more than half the year still to go, so it's really hard, excuse me, it's really hard for me to, you know, look into the crystal ball on this one, but I would say if things did not change from now, or do not change from now, I'd say the first option would be to renegotiate before they just outright cut him loose. Because right now, I don't think they get anything for him. So you might as well see what you can get out of it. Luke says, John, a remarkable win by the team who fought through adversity with heart and determination. Overall, very positive, besides the major injuries, of course. Aaron Dobson, who's becoming a figuration in this offense. And Logan Ryan gets burned too many times. Well, you know, again, Dobson got targeted. He came up with a nice catch and run. I think he's going to continue to be a factor here. But again, you can't throw to, you know, you can't throw to everybody all the time. You know, and if you've got Gronk who's running back into shape, and you've got, you know, guys like Edelman who are open, and, you know, you've got Tim Wright who you want to get to, and you've got, you know, a new toy in Brian Timms you want to try out, and, you know, you've got LaFell who can go for the yak. I mean, you know, Aaron Dobson, all I can tell you is that when you're thrown to, come up with it. If you make a play, guess what? You're going to get thrown to again. It's that simple. He did that on Sunday. Before you give up the ghosting in on Dobson as a whole nitpick here, then I would suggest let's see how he continues to progress. Yeah, Richard is sounding a theme here from calling from Louisville, Kentucky, or writing from Louisville, Kentucky, who says, is there any chance the Patriots give Ben Jarvis Green Ellis a call? I cannot imagine they wouldn't at least kick the tires. Think they would at least kick the tires. Garland writes, what are the chances the Pats bring back James Anderson? And could we possibly trade Amendola for a running back? I don't know. You'd have to find, you always have to find a willing partner. What's Anderson's current status? I think we need to find that out. I want to find out, you know, if he's current, because I haven't kept up in the last few weeks, so I don't know if he's been released. I don't know if he's been hurt. I know he was picked up after the Patriots let him go, but
looks like he's with Tennessee.
The Titans, right? Is he getting snaps? Does he have, what are his numbers this year? Kevin's got to look it up.
Looks like he is playing, but not very much. He only has a handful of tackles.
Okay.
So he is playing, but sparingly.
Well, if Anderson is a possibility, and again, he would have been more of a, you know, he wouldn't have been an every down guy, even if he had stayed with New England. It depends on what you'd have to give up to get
they
it.
They beat Jacksonville by 2 points on Sunday.
Right.
He had one tackle.
One tackle.
I don't see it. I don't really think they give snap counts, but he played a little. So he's at least dressing and getting in the game.
Well, again, then you're talking about probably giving up a late-round draft pick to bring him back. And is it worth it in the process over what you already have or what you've worked out over the course of the last day or so? That's what it'll boil down to, Garland. Chad from the ATL. John, my nitpick today is simply this. What's with all the Brandon Browner hate? I know he wasn't Darrelle Revis in the preseason, but can't we give the guy a break? We haven't seen him play in an actual live fire NFL game in our defense yet. He did make plays in Seattle. Bill picked him up for a reason. So why is it that just because he puts on a Patriots jersey and didn't play like Revis in the preseason that we already write him off? One of the best corners in the game had nothing but good things to say about him, and I think Richard Sherman would know. So can we please just give the man a chance? If he sucks, well, I'll be the first to pluck the feathers off of the crow that I'll eat. Chad says, couldn't get through the day without you. Oh, Chad, that's very nice of you. You're going to make Miss Robin jealous. Seriously, thank you for the comment. You know, I'm not sure what's up with all the Brandon Browner hate either. I mean, I guess maybe I'm not sensing it as much as you, because I know the PFW guys will go off on tangents about players from time to time, and maybe perhaps that's what you're referring to in particular, that I didn't catch that particular argument. But, you know, until a guy plays, I see no reason to hate on him at all based on what we saw in the preseason. Now, was there a penchant for his being physical? Yes. Did he get – or, you know, during practice anyway? Yes. You know, could he potentially be flagged because of the new emphasis? Absolutely. But he won't play. Trust me. He will not play if when he's out there, flags start to fly. We've already seen that, you know, the officials have been fairly consistent, whether you like it or not, and I personally don't like it, but they've been fairly consistent with the contact rules on both sides. They've called offensive pass interference as well as defensive holding quite a bit. So until I see Brandon Browner in a game that means something, I'm not going to hate on the guy. In fact, I can't wait for him to get back. He provides depth, number one. He provides another option, number two. And perhaps, just perhaps, because of his size and because of his physical play, just perhaps guys don't get by him like we've seen them get by both Alphonso Dennard and Kyle Arrington. Maybe. Just thinking out loud here. I see no reason to hate on the guy right now. Not until we see it on the field. And like you said, Chad, if it doesn't work out, then yeah, then we'll jump on that one too. And that'll be a bigger nitpick. But I don't see it as a nitpick or even a problem right now at all. I hope that he's able to come back and play. And I hope it starts Thursday night against the Jets. I think that will be an ideal time, because you're talking about not only locking up one side of the field with Eric Decker and probably Darrell Revis if Decker's completely healthy, but you're talking about, well, Browner and whoever else over on the other side, you know, locking them up lock, stock, and barrel. And then you really can load up in the box, play 52 or whatever, put 8 in the box if you have to with the safety, and dare Geno Smith to beat you. And you're gonna beg him to throw into double coverage, and you're gonna get your share of mistakes made. Think about it. Marvin says, John, I think Paul and PFW had it right earlier when he talked about how even though we had 5 sacks to 2 for the Bills, it still looked as though Tom was under more pressure than Orton was. That said, my nitpick is that no matter what potion level you choose, D-line, linebacker, or the DBs, we are and have been for the last 6 years a step too slow. We just can't get to the quarterback in a timely manner. We can't cover the tight ends with our linebackers, and other than Revis, our DBs are almost always a step behind. I think this is the number one reason we are consistently toward the bottom of the league in stops on third down. Not much we can do about it this year, I know, but it just kills me week in and week out to our guys always trailing the play. It's Marvin in Kernersville, North Carolina. Thank you, Marvin. You bring up good points. I think that was part of the reason why they went out and got Jamie Collins. Perhaps Deontay Skinner can also show that he has some ability in that regard. Scott Chandler was one of my big nitpicks this last week. You know, him getting loose for 6 catches and 105 Bills, and if he hadn't dropped a couple of more tough opportunities, I know, but, you know, he could have had, you know, the veritable field day against the Patriots, and certainly a big enough nitpick to gripe and moan about today. Patriots made Chandler look like Superman out there. They have to get quicker, the linebackers. And I think Dante Hightower, in all honesty, Marvin, has done a better job in coverage this year than we saw him at any time a year ago. He's been hurt the last couple of weeks. Now, maybe this is one area that can improve when he's able to get back in there in the middle and basically fill in for Mayo, like he had to do last year. But I think they've got to draft to need. And when you get a guy like Browner that can play on the other side as well, again, keeping the guys in front of you, not letting them get by you, again, we haven't seen that ability yet. We need to see it before we can really say the jury is out on it. As far as the defensive front is concerned, look, Rob Ninkovich is an undersized defensive end. I know that he's more of a linebacker, but in reality, he's an undersized defensive end, and he's got to rush around guys. He's got to get underneath them. He reminds me so much of Mike Vrabel, it's not even funny. He had 3 sacks. So he was able to get, on a rather porous, Bills offensive line, to his former college teammate in Kyle Orton 3 times. I don't know how you could really argue with that overall. Chandler Jones had the strip sack that largely, you can say, the game kind of hung on that balance and turned it completely around after he strip sacked and recovered the fumble of Orton on Sunday. That's one of those seminal plays that, man, you can just see things turn, on a moment's notice. And I think it did. I understand that how you feel, but it's because the Patriots don't really blitz and they allow their front four, or in some cases front three, and where it didn't work very well, but their front four, they allowed those guys to do the rush because they would rather have the coverage. Maybe it gets better if they decide to continue to draft for need and linebackers that can cover. I hope so. John in South Carolina. Rook, I wanted to call out Justin. His view of the game is understandable. Timms did not get open on either target. The first target, he was covered better than he was on the one where he actually made the catch. I've included a picture as proof. I see the picture. The O-line did play better than they have before because they did not collapse the pocket up the middle constantly. There was more of a pocket in this game than the other games aside from Cleveland. I did mention earlier, and thank you for pointing it out, John. I did mention earlier that Brady did seem to have a pocket to step into. So the one bright spot from the offensive line, as long as we're nitpicking on them today, the one bright spot we did notice was their ability in pass protection. Even though Brady was sacked twice, it could have been worse. He says, my nitpick is the fans. Only one catch by Timms, and people lose their minds. It's a step in the right direction, though, John. Even you would have to admit that. It's at least a step in the right direction. One is better than none. And, yes, he did stretch the field, and that seems to be what everybody's screaming for in New England. Somebody that can stretch the field, stretch a defense, keep them honest. Not so they can gang up and put 8 or 9 in the box against a Patriot running game. Or 8 or 9 in the box against the Patriot short passing game, which has been a problem. Let's get to Marcus in Kansas City. Marcus, you're in the playbook. How are you today?
I'm fine, John. First time caller, long time listener.
Thank you, Marcus, for taking the time. Glad to have you.
Oh, no, no problem, man. I just had to show some more love. You were just talking about Tim. He's a FAMU rattler, so am I. So
good.
I had to call in and show him. And our motto has always been FAMU rattlers will strike, 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 and strike again. So.
I love it. I love it. I think it's great. And for somebody from Florida A&M to have that success and coming in so under the radar as he, you know, and Bill Belichick has gone on about his work ethic, clearly they like what the kid has done. Otherwise, they wouldn't have kept him in through a suspension.
Well, that's what we do in Florida A&M. I just had to call in. I know I'm calling from Kansas City, but yeah,
I just had
some love.
I love your band too, by the way.
Yes, yes. The Marching 100 is the baddest band in the land.
Yeah, they're pretty good.
And coming from the highest of Seven Hills in Tallahassee, Florida.
There you go, baby. I love it.
But that's all I wanted to say. My nitpick today was pretty much the same as everybody else. Offensive line play has been a little bit sluggish. Hope we can get better. That's pretty much all I had to say, and I'll listen out there.
Thank you, Marcus. Appreciate the time today. Thanks for the call. Yeah, it's got to continue to get better, without a doubt. I as much as we harangue on it, like I said, it seems to be my word for the day, as much as we talk about it, much as it seems like we're a broken record on the offensive line, I did just point out that they were much better in pass protection, even with the revolving door personnel-wise, and the guys changing spots. Changing positions as they did almost by the series on Sunday against the Bills. Still want to see some continuity. Still hope that you can get a guy like Brian Stork back in there sooner rather than later. But, man, you just don't know about these head injuries. You know, it depends on the severity of the concussion. And, you know, he's got to be cleared. And I just don't know. And then Connolly having the same thing basically happened to him during the game on Sunday. That's two huge pieces of the puzzle that if they're both in there, then you've got great stability. I like Connolly and Wendell at the guard slots. You know, Stork has got to be, he's, you know, if he can stay healthy, he's got to be able to stay on the field. But, you know, sometimes guys are predisposed to concussions. And we've seen that, you know, there could be some grievous long-term effect on concussions. So you cannot take these things lightly by any stretch. I just hope he's not one of those guys. You know, I don't know if they can, you know, do something, put another helmet on him and oversized, or I don't know how they can do it, but they got to keep a guy like Stork on the field because he really helps solidify the entire line. And then hopefully you can shuttle guys in and out based on their ability to do the job or not do the job at tackle, which we've seen on both sides. I think Marcus Cannon may be a passable right tackle for Sebastian Vollmer. I'm wondering if it might not be advantageous to have the tackles flip sides. Move Solder over, move Vollmer over. Again, just saying, but I'm wondering if that has even been thought of. Glenn in Ottawa, one quick nitpick. What about the one play where the receiver on New England lined up past the ball for penalty? What's up with that? Well, that's just not being aware of the line of scrimmage. That's being too focused on other things. You got to know where you are on the line of scrimmage. If you're lined up wide, you got to know, you know, where the neutral zone is. That's just not paying attention to detail. And again, that was another one of my nitpicks this week. You have to pay attention to detail, to the little things, because it's the little things that will win you games in the long haul and the little things that will lose you games in the long haul because you develop bad habits. And I would suggest to you that most of these little things that seem to be kind of falling through the cracks right now are coming largely, not all, but largely from the younger players on the roster. Again, the older guys have to step up. This is where a guy like Mankins would basically grab somebody by, you know, the shirt collar and say, dude, straighten up. Hopefully that still happens. Michael says, John, I don't know if he's available, but I would go get Jonathan Vilma and bring Blunt back, plus and push some people in the mouth, I think is what he meant to say here. Vilma available too? Kev, can you look that up for me real quick and see what his deal is? Because I have talk about a guy that's fallen off my radar. That's a guy that's fallen off my radar, the ex-Jet player. Rick says from Louisville, he says, what about Michael Bush?
I know he's currently a free agent.
Vilma is?
Yeah, and he's 32 years old.
Yeah, he's an older free agent, but yeah. You'd have to think that, you know, here's a guy, you know, if you need him for a half a season, maybe you could just, you know, run a player and see if he wants to do that. Richard says, what about Michael Bush? I know the Patriots brought him in during the offseason and wanted him before he signed with the Bears. Well, my guess is he's still with Chicago. Again, you're talking about guys that are off my radar because my radar is, Jason, generally speaking, on the Patriots and teams large in the AFC East, largely. Anyway. Kat in Chicago. Hello, Kat. All I'm going to say about Danny Amendola is that anyone who thought we would be an upgrade over Welker, he would be an upgrade over Welker, must have had only a casual awareness of his past performances. I have made my case many times with you and PFW, but honestly, you can't buy a minivan and expect to perform like a Ferrari. That's a pretty good analogy, right? Minivan for a Ferrari? My big nitpick for the week, the offensive line, my only explanation for Nate Solder is that he's hurt or out of shape. He is standing up at the snap, not driving forward, and because of it, he keeps getting turned around. Stay low, Nate. Power off the line, make contact. Don't just stand there flailing your arms. Now, if that isn't great analysis, I don't know what is. But not only is she describing what Nate's problems are, she's basically saying, this is what you got to do. Fix your problems, Nate. That's why Kat's one of the best. Also, is it possible we have the smallest overall interior line in all of football? Why do we keep trying to run up the middle then? I'm frustrated with the coaching staff on the play calling. Well, your point's well taken. I don't know if they're overall the smallest interior line in all of football. That would, again, take a little research here. But, you know, when it comes to inability or the inexperience and using guys like Klein and Devy like they did last week, and you're trying to run up the middle, I can understand your frustration with that. Two things. Number one, you still have to punch at the middle if you're going to make play action work at all. There's got to be a threat. There has to be a threat. Otherwise, why would anybody bite on a play-action fake? And you only need to freeze him for a half a second to a second before play-action becomes effective. Why do you keep trying to run up the middle? Well, you shouldn't. And that's probably why the game planning would need to change if your offensive personnel is going to continue to swirl through like it's coming in on a revolving door in front of a hotel. You know? I mean, you're going to have to play to whatever strengths that you think you might have in the offensive line, and that means game planning differently. So you consider the opponent you're going up against, and you try to game plan considering the weaknesses you know you have with your offensive line. That is on Josh McDaniels. And as much as we've hammered him, and I said this in the opening hour of the program today, I'll mention it again here if you tuned in late, he gets all the credit in the world for a solid game plan against Buffalo. I got no complaints, none. He comes up, you know, big like that again this week against the Jets, you know, in a short week turnaround where you game plan and, you know, the other team cannot take advantage of your shortcomings in the offensive line, and that is rattle Brady, and you know the Jets will come and come hard because that's something that Rex Ryan teams love to do, then he'll get credit again. Max in San Diego. John, it's great to hear you and Kevin on the radio. Thanks for keeping it real here. I like the idea of going after Benny. If he's good to go, why not? My fantasy backfield would be 2011 Law Firm, 2013 Blunt, and Marshawn Lynch. I think everybody would love to have Marshawn Lynch right now. Tight end party would be The Beast, Gronk, Twisty Tim Wright, Who Man, and Jimmy Graham. No kidding. My main nitpicks are the scouting and Fairweather fans. Look, we had a chance to get Lynch at one point, did we not? I mean, Lynch was with keeping Blount and Benny or Ridley. That's more like a three-headed Godzilla-sized dragon keeping defensive coordinators up at night. I think that they might have. I'll guarantee you it was a money situation, though. As for the Fairweather fans that kept doubting our boys, I'd just ask one question. How do you like your crow now? Fried, blackened, grilled, spicy, or extra crispy? Either way, you're going to eat it. Thanks so much, John. You keep giving the PFW guys the business. Well, that's part of my job here, Max, to give those guys the business. Sean from New York says, fantasy guys. Let me save it for them then, all right? Because they'll be able to help you out a heck of a lot more than me. And it looks like that's the other emails that we have there. Okay, that's good. That's fine. Let's take a quick... No, let's not. Because we've only got 9 minutes left in the show. I've got other things I can read here. Let's hit Facebook up here very quickly. And Blarco from Los Angeles wrote in earlier. Nitpicks. We couldn't stop Scott Chandler. We will be facing much better caliber of tight ends soon. Need to fix that. Very true. Very true. They face a pretty good one this week. A guy that I like, Jason Morrow. I thought that was a guy that the Patriots would have considered taking myself. Liked him at Texas Tech in a pass happy offense, and I think he can certainly be a very good professional tight end. Said number two, rushing attack, 50 yards and 27 attempts is poor. I love the commitment, but 1.85 yards per carry is not promising. I'm not a huge Ridley fan, but he was the best running back that we had, which is a scary thought. Understood, Blarco, but I said, I believe, early in the program today, first of all, the Bills are pretty good in the front four, all right? And their running backs do a very good job of filling in the holes and stuffing the run. They're number one in the NFL against the rush for a reason. And that number did not dwindle, did not lessen with their performance against New England on Sunday. But you still have to run the ball to make the passing game flourish. You have to, whether or not, you know, the yardage is there or not. And again, you're right. Under 2 yards per carry will not get it done. But we need to get back to some kind of continuity with what I foresee is the ideal offensive line, with Stork in the middle, with Connolly and Wendell on your guards, and then Solder and Vollmer at the tackles, and get those guys together and healthy and stay healthy. And if you can get them in a rhythm, then I think that ideally is your best line, even with, you know, apparently maybe, you know, some substitutions, you know, every, you know, three or four possessions anyway, you know, to keep guys relatively fresh. And we even saw that a bit on Sunday as well. With, as I said, Cannon came in for Vollmer, I believe, at right tackle. That might end up being a little bit better spot for him. So anyway, understand the rushing attack and the potential problems that you see there, but I'm not so sure that that's a problem that can't work itself out, given a little more time and given a little more health to come back in the offensive line. You know, the Patriots still have their bye week ahead. So let's wait and see how it goes. Did I have anything else on? Ramon says, Nate Solder has been playing badly, especially in noisy on the road stadiums. He seems late in his starting jumps. Could it be possible that he has hearing problems, that he's jumping late because of that? I suppose anything's possible, but I really believe it's more of a concentration factor. He's so, tuned in on a guy like Hughes, who we know has got an unbelievable first step off the line of scrimmage, that he's concentrating on that more so than the snap count. It's all I can tell you. It's the only thing I can come up with. Nothing else really seems to make sense, to be honest with you. I think that's part of the problem. All right, let's see what Twitter brings us today before we wrap it up here. I know. Nothing better than hearing me click my tongue and yell, on the radio. That's great radio. Chanel says, proud of our offense, but why is Danny Amendola still being treated like a stepchild? No attention at all. That's actually, you know. Actually, Chanel, most of the comments about Amendola have been, you know, why are they even, you know, playing him at all? Because he didn't seem to be able to get open. Why is he being treated as a stepchild? Well, clearly, until he's able to figure out a way to get open when he's in there playing, and then he can come up with a throw when he is targeted, then he's still going to be treated like that. It's all about results. Simply put, it's all about results. And if he gets targeted four or five times and comes up with three or four catches, you'll see less and less, nitpicking on him, for lack of a better phrase. That's really the only answer I can give you. And you should be proud of the offense. Brady put it on his shoulders this week, stepped up in the pocket and fired. I have to give credit, A, again, to the offensive game plan, and B, to the receivers. Ran the routes, got open, made sharper cuts, had great yards after the catch, showed they had really good hands when the concentration factor is in there, showed some great open field ability. Gronk looking like the Gronk of old. All of the above. Tim Wright. I mean, there are some weapons there. I'm excited about what the future on down the line this season could very well mean for a guy like Wright in the two tight end and or three tight end sets that they have used to some success so far this year. It's quite possible that that's going to be the rule rather than the exception offensively, and I see no reason for that not to happen, especially if you're going to be playing running back by committee. And let's load up heavy. I love the heavy offensive line, too, throwing in the extra tackle and trying to run behind that. Or playing with three tight ends. I think that's great. Who man's a good blocker? That's why they've kept him around. So let's go heavy. Let's see if it works. I think that's a big factor. Big, big factor overall. Kareem says on Facebook, says, we got 99 problems, but Geno ain't one of them. Hopeful anyway. Says, I'd like to have a blowout on Thursday night. I'd like to own the Jets at home, and hopefully Brady found his new toy in Tim's. Yeah, certainly leaves a lot of intrigue, doesn't it? Just that you've seen him now that he's been in there just for a little bit. At least other teams have to plan for it. Other teams have to include him in their own defensive game plan. It doesn't mean that he's going to be the be-all to end-all, as I think our emailer John pointed out, because it's only one game and it's only one touchdown and what have you. There's still a lot more to go, and I tend to agree with John in that regard. But it's good to know that there's potential there for a weapon that can be used, and certainly it's good to see that Brady is willing to fire one in his direction. I think that's the best thing you can say out of all of it. That there's going to be a confidence factor now there that might not have existed previously. Big factor all the way around. All right, tomorrow's program is going to be a little bit more, a combination program like today's was, as we, wrapped up the nitpicks and brought in some of the what's the focus today. Tomorrow for hashtag WTF Wednesday, we will also combine a bit with hashtag prediction Thursday. So tomorrow, yes, we'll want your predictions on the Patriots-Jets on Thursday night, because we won't be here on Thursday just because of the game day situation. So the pregame social will be here on Patriots.com radio. But we'll want your predictions for tomorrow, so get ready to think about those. Nobody won the yearbook media guide this last week. Nobody picked Patriots 37-22. So your predictions will be welcome, and your predictions, a correct one against the Jets, will win you that media guide yearbook again. But you got to play to get paid. So that'll be tomorrow. Russell Baxter, our pro football guru, he will be in the playbook a day early tomorrow. We'll go over week 7 in the NFL. And Rich Cimini, I believe, right, Kevin? Yep, from ESPN New York, covering the Jets. He will be in the playbook tomorrow. You also want to be in the playbook tomorrow. Same Pats time, same Pats channel, 2 p.m. Eastern time on Patriots.com radio. Thanks to Eric Friends. Thanks to Escal, Eric Scalavino. Thanks to you for all your cards and letters, everything, the phone calls. Good job today, Kevin. See you tomorrow.
Tuesday through Thursday. Hear from NFL experts on Patriots Playbook.
Pleased to be joined on the program now by Jim Nance from CBS Sports, the senior editor for NFL.com. Vic Carucci, welcome onto the program. Ron Jaworski, Phil Simms from CBS, joining us here inside the Playbook. Kenny Albert, who of course calls the play-by-play for the Fox Television Network.
All right, we're pleased to be joined now by Dan Dierdorf, CBS analyst.
Randy Cross joins us here inside the Playbook.
Patriots Playbook with John Rook, Tuesday through Thursday at 2.